Thank you so much for the nice introduction. And I'm so glad to see all these people in this early morning because I have a hard time waking up this morning. It's very nice to be here. Today I'll be presenting one of the work that we have done on a CDC-funded project looking at the correlates of smoking during pregnancy. The study, when it was funded, was it's a clinical randomized trial, which I'll be talking to you a little later, because it wasn't about smoking at all. But what we found was really impressive, and we thought we would present the findings because not a lot of people have looked at that. All right. And as many of you know, tobacco smoking is a major problem in the United States, particularly among pregnant women. And it's about 20% of the pregnant women in general seem to smoke during pregnancy. And that's kind of high, and most of the time they deny it, and we, you know, the clear magnitude or the estimates are not really well known, but we would think that it is usually higher than what we find in surveys. And the biggest problem is 9 months is very short. You know, once you're a smoker, and particularly when you're a disadvantaged population, when you find out you're pregnant, you're not planning on it, and as a result, they are already in there, and 9 months is very short to quit smoking, and usually the negative consequences will happen sooner than most mothers think. And they all have good intention of stopping, but it doesn't happen as much as they want it. And some of the consequences are really grave, particularly among African Americans, especially when you think about the infant mortality. It's disproportionately affecting African American population. And the main problems, unlike other population, where the biggest problem for infant mortality is congenital malformation, for African Americans, it's actually preterm birth and low birth weight. And we know a lot about the causes and the risk factors for this problems, although we don't know everything about preterm birth. And as you can see, about 20% of low birth weights could have been eliminated if we stop smoking during pregnancy. And also about 8% of preterm birth could be eliminated if we really intervene well with smokers during pregnancy, and about 5% of prenatal death could have been eliminated. So when you see it like this, it's actually elimination of smoking would make sense. And we have seen some impacts in the past where, you know, particularly with secondary smoking, you know, that has changed a few things. And through the years, really, we have made so much changes that really helped women with our policies. So it's really an important policy area to think about. These are some of the problems that are related with smoking. Intrauterine growth retardation is one major problem that women face. Low birth weight as a result of that, and preterm delivery. That's by far the most common, particularly among disadvantaged women. Spontaneous abortion. We don't hear more about this, but particularly spontaneous abortion is associated with smoking. And preterm rupture of membrane, that's always, you know, covered up with preterm birth, because when the membrane ruptures, the mother will have the baby. Placenta previa, abruptio placenta, those are really a problem with the placement of the placenta that could lead to preterm birth and also complicated pregnancies and loss of babies. And sudden seeds is also another big problem that happens due to prenatal smoking. So here are some of the mechanisms that happens. The first one is really the lack of oxygen. Every time a woman smokes, a lot of carbon monoxide comes in the body, and of course the blood doesn't carry enough oxygen, and hypoxia is a major problem with the infant, with the baby inside the womb. And that leads to a major problem, which leads to a lot of the things, intrauterine growth retardation, a lot of the things that we talked about earlier. Another big problem is nicotine itself. The nicotine itself, however it is in your body, it reduces placental blood flow, which again affects the baby, because the baby needs a lot of blood. That's how they get their food, and that really impacts the the baby. And then the other is problem is the cyanide from tobacco smoke contributes to the growth and also fatal mortality. And a lot of the chemicals that are found in the cigarettes itself are really toxic things. And yesterday somebody was presenting about this, and they were talking about talking to a woman and telling her exactly what when she smokes what comes in her body. And she was so shocked, because a lot of the thing is we tell them smoking is bad, but we do not tell them what they are really putting in their body. The only thing that most people know is really the nicotine aspect of it, but not a lot of the toxic chemicals that comes with it. So I think that's also another important thing, especially if we are really engaged in health promotion activities. So as I said earlier, racial disparities is also a major problem. And I think when we think of racial disparities in birth outcome issues, all we think about is infant mortality, perinatal health, kind of thing. And also, you know, one thing that we have learned is actually with smoking, there is disparities. So compared to white women, just comparing the two populations, the white and the African Americans, you know, even if they smoke the same number of cigarettes, it looks like the amount of cotinine that's found in the blood system among African Americans is higher. So for some reason, it could be genetic, it could be biologic. We really don't know a lot of the, there are some hypotheses out there, but what we found was actually African Americans have a higher level of cotinine in their body. So that actually contributes, you know, African American who smokes is affected highly by the problem. So these are some of the factors that are associated with continued smoking during pregnancy. These are really what are the risk factors a lot of people, and if you are from the practice part of the world, what you want to know really is, okay, how would I know? A patient comes in or a pregnant woman comes in, and then you, obviously everybody's gonna ask, you know, do you smoke? And also the way we ask the question matters. Sometimes what happens is, you don't smoke, do you? You know, if I ask that question that way, you know, it's really an awkward situation. Definitely the first answer would come, no, I'm not smoking. Again, it's very, very difficult situation that people have, which would also lead to, you know, understanding from the woman perspective. As a pregnant woman, whether the pregnancy was intended or planned or not, usually once a woman finds she is pregnant, her intention is to quit immediately. And of course she would think that, oh, I'm gonna stop tomorrow, so I'm not gonna say that, you know, I'm smoking because I know I'm gonna stop. I couldn't really go on with this. So it's highly likely as healthcare providers, we're not gonna hear from the women that, you know, a woman is actually smoking or not. And that's why it's always, you know, underreported. And of course the stigma attached to it. Nowadays, smoking while pregnant, people would, you know, kind of, how could you? That also is there. So there is a lot of issues that we have to deal with. And also another thing that we have found in terms of risk factors is a partner or significant other smoking, which makes it so difficult. Additionally, you know, the secondhand smoke still stays there. But again, when the, you know, a lot of the intervention is always targeted to the pregnant women, we also have to target the family. You cannot just try to be successful with a woman without addressing the issue with that particular woman alone. We found that the father of the baby residing in the same house, if he is smoking, the same problem happens over and over again. Another few demographic factors include low education, low socioeconomic status. Those are really some of the demographic factors. But again, that's going to be ecologic fallacy, because just because someone has certain characters, demographic characteristics, you can't label them as smokers or having high risk. So if I'm walking, you know, if you see me that I'm black, you cannot make that assumption. So for clinicians, it makes it very hard to identify women with those kinds of problems. Self-efficacy is a major problem, you know, particularly when it comes to stopping. And as you know, you will have only 15 minutes as a physician or a clinician, you know, a nurse or whoever is intervening with that pregnant woman or a case manager. You have a very short period of time, and asking all those questions in terms of really her her self-efficacy or her self-esteem or other issues that really impact smoking, that's going to be very, very hard to do in a very short period of time. So in this particular study, what we wanted to do is really recognize that the, you know, these factors are so important, and also because it's underreported due to denial or the lack of understanding of these influencing factors, we felt like we need really to study other risk factors that may be associated with it. And also clinicians may not feel, you know, in terms of asking that question, do you smoke, or, oh, you don't, I don't think you're smoking kind of question, you know, that doesn't happen. So one of the correlates that we found was the association with prenatal depression. And looking at the literature, it's not really clear cut. Like, there were some studies that found it's inconsistent, an association between smoking and depression, and some during pregnancy, and some didn't. So it's really out there in terms of the association. But when we conducted the study, this is one thing that we wanted to explore and understand in our population. And this study was done in Virginia in a big urban inner city university hospital in Richmond, Virginia. So as I said a little earlier, this funding came in because we have the highest in Richmond City, we have the highest infant mortality rate, particularly among African Americans. And we've been receiving this fund for the past 3 years. And one of the things that we found was prenatal care, early entry to prenatal care, and also number of prenatal care and adequacy of prenatal care is significantly lower among African Americans, and we thought that we could come up with a better idea or interventions to help women to address these problems. And we have some case management programs. Those who are enrolled in those case management programs do well, but they're not doing as well as we want them to. So now we're starting with this project, a navigation model where each pregnant woman would be assigned a navigator. Rather than like case managing, the navigators would show them how to do it. So when in the subsequent pregnancies, that they would know what to do and they will have the self-esteem and empower to be able to do it. So it's a different way of looking at it to address the problem. So that's the randomized clinical trial that we are doing. So for this study, what we did was we screened every patient that walked into that hospital. And in that hospital, we get over 2,500 births a year, and the majority are African American. So everyone walking in for the past, I think, 18 months has been screened all African Americans have been screened for high-risk pregnancy. High-risk pregnancy, not from the clinical perspective, but also including the social perspective, because a lot of times we only focus on the clinical perspective when they are really, truly high-risk. So eligibility included African Americans, pregnant and attending first prenatal visits. So it has to be the first prenatal visits, at least 16 years of age, and they have to speak English. We don't have translation into other languages. In our population, we have Hispanic population, but they are first generation, and the impact on poor birth outcome is not as bad as African Americans. So we went into the outpatient clinic and we basically screened them. And then during the screening process, we asked them a few questions. It was face-to-face survey, and we asked them a lot of questions, including demographic question, medical, clinical, reproductive type of questions, risk factors, including substance use type of questions. And then for their time, we gave them a $5 gift card. And through this process, what we were trying to do is really identify high-risk women with, you know, social and clinical high-risk population, so that we can randomize them into navigation and non-navigation. So this is a cross-section of people who are walking in. So these are some of the variables that we collected, and we asked a question on depression as well and domestic violence. Here is the question on depression. And for those of you, to just clarify, there are depression measures, but for this screener, we didn't use the depression measures. And what we were trying to do is, these are validated two questions to get at depression. And because we didn't have the time to do the Edinburgh or any of the assessment models, we tried to look at, you know, if they really have some depressive symptoms and we can take it further, was the first initial. And a lot of the time, as you know, for some of you who are really in clinics or providing case management services, we do not do, you know, the Edinburgh to assess depression. We usually base our clinical diagnosis based on what we ask in those settings, because they don't have the time to do those. So we asked two questions. During the past months, have you felt down, depressed, or helpless more days than not? And then the second one is, during the past month, have you had little interest or pleasure in doing things more days than not? So those two questions were there, and if they say yes, they are, have some depressive symptoms that really require further assessments. And then in terms of smoking, this is also another validated smoking questions that one of our, actually our faculty member developed, and it's published. And and she has gotten a little honest response with these questions. And what we found was really the question goes, when did you last smoke a cigarette? And then never, today, past 7 days, past month. And with those kinds of questions, they tend to answer those questions rather than saying, no, no, yes, it won't happen that way. And the majority of them are actually saying in the past 7 days, nobody, you know, some did, like 18%, I believe, today, but most of them in the past 7 days. So usually you can tell that actually, you know, they are still struggling with it. And the same thing with prescription drug use, illicit drug use, and alcohol use. Those are really other major problems that are stigmatizing, and people, pregnant women, won't admit to those issues. So we ask the same questions similarly. We ask these questions similarly. So in terms of the data analysis, we simply did a descriptive analysis and bivariate analysis, and to look at if there are any association. And the biggest thing that surprised us when we preliminary data analysis happened when the CDC came for a site visit, and we were looking at it, and you know that depression and smoking association just came out just like that, and we felt like, oh my gosh, you know, we really have to consider this, and it might have other implication in the population. And we looked at all the other factors. And unlike other studies, as I look through the literature, you know, for example, involvement in the legal system, not a lot of people have looked at that. And then people who are engaged in CPS, situation where the child protective services is on them, a lot of people haven't really looked at those. In our data sets, we were able to examine those data. So for this data analysis, we had about 832 pregnant African-American women. The age range from 16 to 53, and the mean age is about 24.7. And the, you know, over a quarter had high school less than high school education, and nearly 50% are not employed or stated that they are homemakers. And this population is kind of an underserved population, and they three-fourths are under public insurance or receiving public benefits, 62% receiving like SSI, food stamp, WIC type of thing. And the majority of women, when you ask about marital status, reported that they are single. But however, norms have changed. And single, you know, in the old way, single, married, those are the things that are kind of standard. But there are a lot of women who live together with a partner. And we asked that question, and they, about 80% reported that there is a partner in their life that they live together with. And, you know, there is a more interest whether social support really impact this type of outcome in terms of birth outcomes. And then many, actually nearly 80%, are in relationship with the father. So that's an important, you know, relationship. However, we really haven't asked whether that relationship is a good relationship or not. So that's also another thing. And 4.8% of the women do feel unsafe, which is really a sad situation. So looking at substance use during pregnancy, as you see here, this graph shows that 32% using those questions, 32% admitted that they are smoking during the pregnancy, which is really, really high. And then 14% say they use alcohol during pregnancy. And then 6.9, nearly 10% use drug, illicit drug use, and then about 3% use prescription drugs. So really there is a good, you know, a good data in terms of substance use in this population, and the major, it looks like tobacco smoke is a major problem. And another surprising fact is about 44% actually admitted that they have some depressive symptoms. So that really requires further assessment to examine women's situation in that aspect of it. So just looking at the unadjusted analysis, what we found was a lot of demographic variables are associated. Age is one, education status is another one. Employment is highly significant, as you can see. Insurance type is also another thing that we looked at. Marital status, as you see, is not. And again, now more and more marital status, the meaning of it is a little different. Nowadays, we really have to look at different types of cohabitations. Physically hurt is also significant. And another thing that we saw is legal system contact. And this is really, really hugely significant, as you see here. You know, it seems like more women smoking, 33% versus 11%, are engaged in legal system. And the CPS is also another thing that we found was really, the Child Protective Services is also another thing that we have seen. So it seems like there are a lot of risk factors, not usually that we are really looking at commonly, but these are really some factors that we looked at. And then prescription drug use was not significant, but as you see, illicit drug use, alcohol use, and depression are highly significant. And since our really interest is on depression, looking at smokers and non-smokers, smokers, 57% reported having depressive symptoms, whereas 37% of the non-smokers reported depressive symptoms. And when we adjusted using logistic regression analysis, what we found was, again, age was really a significant confounder, so we had to keep it in there. But with increasing age, there was an increased smoking. And education, of course, the low education was highly impacted nearly two times. And then employment was a very important indicator, again, about two times more likely. And the legal system was also another major factor that we found that associated with smoking as a correlate. And these are not surprises, but you know, it was really huge in terms of alcohol use, 2.9, nearly three times more likely to smoke compared to the non-smokers. Illicit drug use, five times more likely, smokers are more likely to use illicit drug compared to the non-smokers. And then in terms of depression, 1.56 times more likely to be depressed compared to non-smokers. So basically, that was really the main finding in terms of depression, really 1.6 times more likely. And also, all these factors are really factors that are socially social-based type of problems that women have, and these are factors that are mostly denied. They are not reported. But if, as a clinician or as a person who's working with patients, if we ask one question, it looks like we can ask other questions as well, and that could give us a lead in terms of identifying women and intervening with them. So these are some of the factors. And basically, it's really associated with highly stigmatized behavior, as you can see. And of course, this has to be investigated further. And definitely, other studies have revealed similar findings with other risk factors. You probably know a lot more. A lot of review articles have been coming out looking at correlates or risk factors for smoking. But in terms of depression, really, there wasn't a lot. And there was recently, because it wasn't consistent, some found an association with smoking and some didn't. There was a recent review article that looked at just out in 2010 that looked at this association. And still, the problem's still out there, and further studies are still required to examine this association. And you know, depression in our population was really higher compared to 12% in average, 13% in average nationally. So we really need to deal with it. But the take-home message in terms of our study is really, these are really some of the stigmatized factors, and can we make something out of it in terms of clinical practice, which I'll be talking about. Of course, it has a lot of limitation. It's a cross-sectional study, and it's self-reported, and it's possible it's still underreported. I mean, these factors could be the tip of the iceberg, definitely. And there is always the social desirability bias out there with this kind of behavior. And also this assessment, because it was just a screener, we didn't ask a lot of the other questions that included, you know, partner smoking, which was really an important one, lifetime difficulty to quit. That's a good indicator. If they had failed in the past, it's highly likely that they may not be able to stop. And in terms of practical implication, really, this could prompt us in the future in terms of asking these questions in a better way. So further studies have also need to examine. So I need to stop here, and these are the funding sources, and I think we don't do questions right now. Okay, great, thank you so much.